you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
So I went on vacation and I found out about a thing and then I came back and I don't want vacation to be over. So we're going to talk about that thing.
This happens to both of us from time to time.
Like, yeah.
Even if I go on vacation and I think, okay, I'm just going to take a breather and not think about work-related things.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be walking around and find some fascinating thing that then becomes an episode of the podcast.
Yeah, that is exactly what happened. I was so sworn, because there's been a lot of stuff going on. I've been very busy and very stressed, and I was so sworn that I was not going to deal with work stuff for the week that we were away. And then about 3 days in, I was like, oh, dang it. I'm totally doing it. So my beloved and I recently went to Hawaii. Yeah. Heaven. It's one of my favorite places on earth. I'm very attached to it. I cry when I leave. And the resort that we were at had a lot of Menehune theming because you're at Disney's Aulani. They have a whole thing about it. And there are these like little figures that are everywhere in playful poses, and they're kind of hidden in plants and in corners. And we had been talking to one of the staff about other things, and my husband asked about it, and that gentleman described the Menehune as Hawaii's leprechauns. And then one of his colleagues that was nearby was like, that is way too simple. Like, that's not really right. You're telling these people something that they're going to not understand later. So then I was like, okay, break it down. And then I wanted to go do a bunch of reading about it. So here's the thing. This becomes one of those history pieces that is very tricky to examine for a couple of reasons. For one, the Menehune, and we'll tell you exactly what they are. And I shouldn't have used the word exactly because there is no exact, but they're part of an oral history. And of course, that in and of itself is sort of a place where it's easy for facts to get a little shifty. And then once it starts to appear in books and other media that's written by outsiders, this whole thing is often sensationalized or misinterpreted. For example, there are episodes of shows like Finding Bigfoot that talk about the Menehune. And I'm not throwing any shade to that show if you love it, but that is definitely more geared toward enticing viewers with tantalizing myth stories that are framed as possibly real. more than maybe sort of really delving into like anthropological reasons for mythology and whatnot. And there was actually another show, and I'm forgetting the name of it, that I found on the History Channel that kind of had the same even impetus point as me, where it's like, we're at Disney's Aulani and they have these things and we're going to search it out. But even so, it wasn't, and which seemed lovely. But again, it gets into this weird interpretation thing where you want to get viewers in. And so you maybe like their cuts to commercial clearly were all cliffhangers about these little people were real. So we don't want to do that. The other problem is that this story has also been used as part of tourism branding. It's even Minnehune have even appeared on like product branding, and it's part of this sort of casual storytelling that gets told. If you go to any like Hawaii, tourism site, they probably have something about it. And so it gets kind of put in this narrative that's about being really fun, but that sort of steps it farther and farther away from any sort of historical record that we actually have. So I thought it would be fun to actually really delve into this sort of legend and myth area and talk about why it continues to be a thing, how it has shifted, etc. So that's what we're doing today. You guys get to come on Holly's extended I Can't Bear to Be Back in Reality vacation episode.
So first, we will talk about the legend of the Minnehune. It's estimated that the Hawaiian Islands were first occupied by humans somewhere between 300 and 800 CE. So these earliest inhabitants arrived in canoes, having traveled from the Marquesas Islands, which is about 2,300 miles south of the Hawaiian Islands, so also there in the Pacific Ocean.
For a sense of distance, right, as a modern day flight, that would still take hours and hours and hours. And that is with the benefit of modern technology and guidance systems. So this journey by canoe from the Marquesas Islands, presumably navigating via the stars, would have been no joke whatsoever. And those early settlers landed on Hawaii's Big Island, and then using the plants and other resources that they brought with them, they set up an agrarian culture.
A second wave of Polynesian peoples is believed to have arrived in the Hawaiian Islands around 1100. And this wave was from Tahiti. And sometimes it's described as an invasion. Their arrival is characterized as one in which the newcomers conquered the inhabitants who were descended from that earlier group from the Marquesas Islands.
Yeah, sometimes it sounds like there was some aggression, and other times it's just described as that previous group was basically terrified of these newcomers and kind of ran. But according to the legend, the tiny people known as the Minnehune were on Hawaii before either the Marquesas or the Tahitian Islanders. And we're going to talk about how these three groups actually all tie together in this myth a little bit later in the show.
So these tiny folks, described as being 2 or 3 feet tall, very approximately a meter.
Yeah, you'll see a range in there, too. Some will say as small as 6 inches even, but most of the averages are between 2 and 3 feet.
Yeah, and they're said to have lived on the Hawaiian Islands before any humans arrived there. Sometimes they're described as an ongoing hidden forest culture that still exists today, with sightings still being reported from time to time. And there are a number of different stories about how the Minnehune may have arrived in the islands. Many of them involve some kind of nature-linked, polytheistic spiritual stories that are common in the Hawaiian religion.
While the Minnehune are sometimes described as a sort of Hawaiian analog to creatures like leprechauns, as I mentioned in the intro, or elves, fairies, or gnomes, there is a really significant distinction. And it's that Minnehune are not generally described as having any sort of magical powers. They are just small people who live in the forest and have an incredible work ethic.
And the Minnehune are described as skilled craftspeople. According to legend, they build at night, and if anyone were to see them at work, the work would be abandoned. So this really reminds me, for an analog that is maybe not so far off base, the story of the shoemaker and the elves.
Very similar.
While the most extreme versions of this late night work myth say that the Minnehune would build entire structures overnight, other versions merely suggest that they just worked at night, but there could be successive nights of labor on a given project.
Yeah, it kind of depends who, you know, obviously some of the older, more deeply mythological ones suggest that they had like one night to complete huge things. That strains credulity. And they have been credited with building everything from temples to canoes. But we are going to talk about four specific sites that are attributed to them. Two we'll kind of talk about very briefly, the third a little bit longer, and then the fourth we'll get into more detail. But at the end of those four, you will see why those were the ones we chose.
The first is Necker Island. On Necker Island, which is a small northwestern island in Hawaii, there are 33 shrines that are made of stone, and they're often called artifacts of the Menehune. According to legend, Necker Island was the last refuge of the Menehune as they fled other Polynesian peoples who had moved to the islands. In 1988, Necker Island was added to the National Register of Historic Places.
And on the Big Island, Kahului'u Bay is famed as a surfing center, but it has its own connection to the Menehune. There is a breakwater in the bay called the Kapa'oka Menehune. I have probably pronounced that wrong, even though I had people from Hawaii pronounce it for me while I was there. And this is a long line of stonework rock formations that may have at one point extended to completely close off the bay. And according to legend, the Menehune wanted to make the bay into one big fish pond. But a high priest, wanting to preserve the great surfing there in the bay, tricked the Menehune into halting their work by having a rooster crow in the night. And so according to this story, the Menehune, having heard the rooster, believed that the morning had arrived, and so they left their labor, never to return to it.
In 1974, the area around the bay was added to the National Register of Historic Places also.
The third spot is the Alekoko Fish Pond, and that's about a half mile inland from Nawiliwili Harbor on the southeast coast of the island of Kauai. And this pond represents early fish farming. It is made up of a dirt wall with a stone face that cuts off a river bend and creates a fish pond. It's really quite clever. And the wall extends about 5 feet a little less than 2 meters above the water, and it's 4 feet, so like 1.3 meters wide.
It's believed that this pond is more than 1,000 years old, and that stone-faced wall, according to legend, was built by the Menehune. It's the oldest fish pond on the island of Kauai, and it's described in its National Register application as, quote, the best example of an inland fish pond in the entire state. So that document, by the way, also mentions the Menehune as its builders.
And this lush, vegetation-friendly Alekoko Fish Pond, which is also known as the Menehune Fish Pond, was added to the National Register of Historic Places in 1973.
We're going to talk about a structure that's sometimes used as evidence of Menehune construction. But before we get to that, we are going to pause and have a quick word from one of our sponsors.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May.
Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule-release to learn more.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Leesa, the sleep experts. Here at Leesa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Leesa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Leesa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus 2 free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.
So also on the island of Kauai is perhaps the most famous of the Menehune's attributed works, and that is the Kiki'aola Ditch in Waimea. And this irrigation ditch sits at the meeting point of two rivers, the Waimea and the Makawele, and it's about 7,000 feet inland.
This ditch was built, again, according to an application for it to be made a National Historic Site in 1984, as a means of irrigating taro crops. Taro root is used as one of the mainstays of Hawaiian food. Poi is made from beating the root into a paste after it's been baked.
If you've never had poi, it's fascinating. I love it. Not everybody does. It's one of those things you can add a lot of other stuff to. We went on a really fun sailing canoe while we were there, and we ended up in a whole big discussion with the crew about poi and how they each eat it, which was hilarious because some of them grossed each other out with their choices. And according to legend, this project, the Kiki'aola Ditch, was built by the Menehune under a directive from King Ola of Waimea. And his name is the Ola in Kiki'aola. And while it is called a ditch, that is maybe conjuring not the correct images, it is actually an interesting feat of engineering. So not only did this causeway transport water at a level above that of the river, but it also turns a corner at a cliff's edge in the process. And this construction uses a jointed stone dry masonry technique that isn't like anything else in the area. The stones used for it are cut with squared off smooth edges, and they fit together really tightly without using any mortar.
The legend is that the Menehune lined up side by side over a 7-mile stretch to hand each of the stones down the line, sort of like a bucket brigade, from the quarry site to the construction location of the actual ditch. In all likelihood, whoever built the ditch used stone that was closer to the actual area.
Yeah, this is one of those things that there was like a survey that was published in the early part of the 20th century that was like the closest match to this stone is 7 miles away. But even in that same document, it's like, well, there's also some that's closer. But I guess it was maybe not as good as of a match. But the ditch was first referenced in writing in 1792, and it is mentioned in the diary of Captain George Vancouver, who traveled through the Waimea Valley that year. And based on his writing, he and his team were really quite impressed with this structure. They wrote, quote, "As we proceeded, our attention was arrested by an object that greatly excited our admiration, and at once put an end to all conjecture on the means to which the natives resorted for the watering of their plantations. A lofty perpendicular cliff now presented itself, which, by rising immediately from the river, would effectively have stopped our further progress into the country had it not been for an exceedingly well-constructed wall of stones and clay about 24 feet high, raised from the bottom by the side of the cliff, which not only served as a pass into the country but also as an aqueduct to convey the water brought thither by great labor from a considerable distance. The place where the river descends from the mountains affording the planters an abundant stream for the purpose to which it is so advantageously applied. This wall did not less credit to the mind of the projector than to the skill of the builder, terminated the extent of our walk, from whence we returned through the plantations whose highly improved state impressed us with a very favorable opinion of the industry and ingenuity of the inhabitants."
By the late 1800s, the nickname Menehune Ditch was being used in reference to this structure. And as a random aside, in a book about historical irrigation that was written in 1933, Holly found an offhand mention of a theory that a Russian military detachment in a fort near the mouth of the river built the ditch in 1817. The same book points out that since Vancouver's description predates that by a couple of decades, this theory doesn't hold water.
Holly, I'm so sorry. Holly hates puns.
Apologizing for the pun.
I hate puns, and yet there it is. That was my fault. Yeah, it's interesting. I had not seen that Russian military detachment theory anywhere else, and it just kind of popped up in this really sort of obscure book about Hawaiian irrigation history. I was like, what? What? I couldn't find anything else on it. So, one account of this ditch's creation, written by Westerner William Hyde Rice in his 1923 book, Hawaiian Legends, says, quote, Ola, the king, obtained the promise of the Menehune that they would build a water lead at Waimea if all the people stayed in their houses, the dogs muzzled, and the chickens shut in calabashes, so that there would be no sound on the appointed night. This was done, and the Menehune completed the water course before daybreak.
Only 100 feet, or about 30.5 meters, of the 7,000-foot length of this ditch shows this ancient stonework. There's another 100 feet of bermed ditch that is also believed to be from the original work on the structure, but it doesn't have that stonework. A road was built along the ditch in 1920, and during that time, a lot of modifications were made, really without regard to historical preservation. Additionally, there are pieces of stonework that were taken by residents and construction workers who were working on that road to use them for other uses. So significant pieces of the original ditch have been lost. The ditch does still function as a form of irrigation, though.
And as we mentioned a moment ago, an application was filed in 1984 for this ditch to be added to the National Register of Historic Locations, and that application was approved. So that keeps coming up, and if you're counting, that makes four sites on the National Register that are attributed either in part or in total to the work of the Menehune.
So this is really impressive. We don't generally see a lot of applications for official historical designations that credit an element of mythology for their creation. Like, that's not a thing that comes up over and over. But there are a couple of explanations that have been offered to explain this whole myth from the perspective of what really happened.
And I will say, before we get into these explanations, they're not ultra satisfying. So just brace. So one theory that lends the Menehune myth a little bit of real world validation, though, is that it may have been bolstered by encounters with Japanese travelers to Hawaii. In a 2009 article written for Smithsonian by oceanographer Curtis Ebesmeyer and journalist Eric Sigliano, the pair describe how currents of the Pacific have been landing Japanese mariners at unintended locations for thousands of years.
In the course of the article, they write, quote, the Japanese presence in Hawaii may go back much further. Hawaiian legend recounts that the first Polynesian settlers there encountered diminutive Menehune, little people, marvelous craftsmen who still dwell in deep forests and secret valleys. At the time, the Japanese were more than a foot shorter than the average Polynesians and adept at many strange technologies, from firing pottery and spinning silk to forging metal that might indeed have seemed like marvels.
So it's possible that this myth may have been bolstered by at least sightings of these lost Japanese mariners who were maybe camping or trying to make their way. But that still seems like a really unlikely source for this whole idea.
That seems like a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
In a moment, we're going to talk about an intriguing recent discovery that's often relayed as part of the evidence for the Menehune, but we're going to take another quick sponsor break before we get to that.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the
the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit nfl.com/schedule-release to learn more.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Lisa, the sleep experts. Here at Lisa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Lisa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Lisa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus 2 free pillows. Go to lisa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See lisa.com for more details.
A recent addition to efforts to corroborate stories of the Minnehune is Homo floresiensis. This is also sometimes called the Hobbit. This is a recently discovered early human. Skeletal remains were discovered on the island of Flores in Indonesia in 2003, and that discovery was made public in 2004.
So this species was tiny, about 3.5 feet tall, just a little over a meter. They had small brains about the size of an orange, large teeth, and large feet, which is how they got this hobbit nickname. Fossil evidence indicates that they used stone tools and they hunted, and tools found at the site have been dated back as far as 190,000 years ago. They might have used fire for cooking based on charred stegodon bones that were found in the cave.
And the female skeleton that was found in 2003 by a team that was actually there trying to track Homo sapiens migration from Asia to Australia was named LB1. That's after Liang Bua Cave, where it was found. And that skeleton was dated to about 80,000 years ago. And since the discovery of LB1 as part of that bigger thing, it wasn't like these happened way later. They were all kind of in a big discovery arc. Remains of another 12 separate individuals have also been recovered, with dating ranging from 100,000 to 60,000 years of age for the various specimens. But the only place that Homo floresiensis has been found is in that one cave. So we don't know if this was a species that evolved in isolation or if they traveled elsewhere or anything. And this was, again, in Indonesia.
Naturally, though, this has raised ideas that Homo floresiensis might be linked to the Minnehune in some way. Because this discovery is still quite new, there is a lot of debate about the find, about its meaning in the Earth's timeline. Initially, it was believed that these people were wiped out by a volcanic eruption about 12,000 years ago. But more recently, it's been suggested that it was really modern humans traveling through Indonesia as far back as 50,000 years ago that led to their extinction.
And there are, we should say, scientists that believe that classifying this discovery as a new species is in fact wrong, and that this is a case of modern human society that had a mutation or a disorder in the small isolated gene pool that they had just living on this one island. There is also on that same island a species of pygmy elephant that similarly had, an adaptation or a mutation, depending on how you want to look at it, from being isolated. So they kind of use that as evidence of like, hey, this was probably also happening with these humans here.
So there are lots of stories and myths that are connected to the Minnehune, and a lot of them are really compelling. These explanations of Japanese travelers and Homo floresiensis offer some, you know, pretty interesting ideas connected to the story.
Yeah, there are interesting ways to rationalize it. But the problem that keeps coming up is that there is literally no hard evidence of an actual 2 to 3 foot tall race of forest people on the Hawaiian Islands. The evidence that's often used as proof of the existence of the Minnehune in that form is real in that it exists. So like that pond and that ditch that are named after them, those are real structures, but there hasn't ever been any evidence or finds that show actual short forest-dwelling humans on the Hawaiian Islands.
One possibility that I think is really interesting is that these stories actually predate human arrival from the Hawaiian Islands, and that they traveled along with Hawaii's early settlers as part of their own cultural history. So they are like a belief that goes so far back that it came to Hawaii with its first human inhabitants.
Yeah, and there is also a theory that that first wave of Marquesas Island settlers built those various structures that have been attributed to the Minnehune, and that when the second wave of settlers from Tahiti arrived on the island several hundred years later, they found that stonework ditch, the stone wall, etc., and they developed the myth of the Minnehune over time to explain the existence of them.
One of the other aspects to unraveling this myth is linguistic. There were three clearly delineated classes in both Hawaiian and Tahitian early history. Tahiti's lowest class was called Minnehune. Since that Tahitian wave of settlers is usually described as taking over the lands of the original group who first came to Hawaii, it's also possible that there's this multi-layered aspect to the blurring of the Minnehune story. It's likely that they considered the people they conquered to be Minnehune, or the lowest status. So it's not too far of a jump to consider that over the years and over all the retellings, especially as in an oral history context, this meaning of lower transformed into referring to their height instead of to their social class, leading to the idea that they were physically smaller people.
But perhaps the most likely, and something that some historians really put forth as the actual source of all of this, is the theory that the oral history was probably misinterpreted when it was retold by outsiders who were wishing to transfer it to the written record. For example, in that 1923 book we referenced earlier called Hawaiian Legends by William Hyde Rice that we referenced, the Minnehune are described in pretty quaint storytelling style terms. And while the author is clearly intending to relay a myth, the manner in which he writes also makes it seem as though he's stating facts. So here's an excerpt. The Minnehune were small people, but they were broad and muscular and possessed great strength. Contrary to common belief, they were not possessed of any supernatural powers, but it was solely the account of their tremendous strength and energy and their great numbers that they were able to accomplish the wonderful things they did. These pygmy people were both obedient and industrious, always obeying their leaders.
To further complicate matters, Rice then goes on to describe all the places that you can see the paths and trails and other structures of the Minnehune, and this blend of fact and fiction writing style seems to have fed back into the modern version of the myth.
Yeah, I mean, it struck me so strongly reading his account that he doesn't delineate between when he is telling the story and when he is relaying factual evidence, and it gets really blurry.
Yeah, this reminds me of that episode we did that was all about ghost ships and how there was a fictionalized version of one of those ghost ship stories that people interpreted as fact. And even now, like, you find the facts in quotation marks from that fictional story,
as the description of how it happened.
Yeah. And it's also worth noting that Rice was one of the men who combined business and politics in the overthrow of the Hawaiian kingdom. So his retelling of these myths was, whether consciously or unconsciously, almost certainly colored by his perceptions of the Hawaiian people, as he himself was a member of an Anglo family that was living on the islands and acquiring a great deal of land and power, often at the expense of the native islanders.
So it does not seem likely that there was a literal race of tiny nocturnal people living in the forests of Hawaii, building things in the middle of the night. But there may well have been a group of skilled laborers whose work was attributed to a mythical people. I mean, someone built all these structures that we talked about earlier in the episode.
Yeah, to me, it makes the most sense that Tahitian word manahune has shifted over time and caused this confusion between lower class and lower height. Mm-hmm. But again, we'll probably never know. This is so far back in history. And I don't want to rob anyone of the fun of the stories of the Manahune, because it's very, very endearing stuff. And it's really charming and fun. And mythology is like wonderful and powerful and has great meaning. But it is one of those things that merits a little bit of examination, I think.
Do you also have listener mail for us?
I do. It's listener mail that kind of cracked me up. This is from our listener, Kristen. She writes, "Dear Holly and Tracy, I just listened to your podcast about Pauline Sabin. You mentioned that Pauline outlived multiple husbands and was buried next to her second husband and not her third. I had to giggle at your discussion over how to choose which husband to be buried next to. My great-grandmother solved this dilemma in the most delightful way. When her first husband died, burial plots were purchased for her whole family, which included her and their young son. She remarried a few years later and eventually outlived that husband as well. Already owning burial plots, her second husband was interred at the other end of the row of three. So when my grandmother passed, she was laid to rest in the plot between the two. I can't imagine a more clever solution than to choose both. Incidentally, she says, I live in Nebraska. Her child goes to an elementary school that is named after Pauline's grandfather, J. Sterling Morton." That's a really fun story. It is one of those things that I always wonder about. It's a discussion that has come up in my family from time to time, and we kind of giggle about it, and then people feel uncomfortable and shut it down. I'm glad to hear how somebody else's family handled it, and that there's this cool connection to the story of Pauline Sabin there. So thank you, Kristen. If you would like to write to us, you can do so at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com. You can find us across the spectrum of social media as Missed in History. We are on the web as missedinhistory.com. That's our website where you can visit all of the archives of every episode of the show ever of all time, way before Tracy and I were ever here. But if you look at the shows that Tracy and I worked on, there will be show notes on those ones as well, so you can look at our sources if you want to do a little extra reading for yourself. We encourage you, come and visit us at missedinhistory.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Our kids have said to us since we moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.